When they were about to have their first baby, a friend of his took him aside and closed the door to his office and said these words, "Your life, as you know it, is going to be utterly and wondrously destroyed." Parenthood is hard. It's the hardest job on earth, but it's so worth it. Then he went talking 10, 15 minutes about parenthood and his experience, and then he delivered the gold, the stuff. This is what he said. He said, "This is what I did when my first child was born. On her first birthday, I wrote her a letter, easy, just three sentences, three little paragraphs, something I love about the past we've had together, something I love about the present, and something I hope for the future. I write one letter to each child every day on their birthday, and I put them inside a little shoebox, and I keep them in my closet." That was the gold. That was the stuff. When Andrew was born, he took up this practice. On his first birthday, he wrote him a letter. "Andrew, the day you were born, I was so scared. I didn't know what to do with a baby. I didn't know how to change a diaper. I didn't know how to wash that slippery little thing. I didn't know how to put one to sleep, but I learned through you. I don't know anything about any other child, but I know you. You're going to be smart. You're going to be tender. You're not going to be that kid that trips other kids on the bus and does that whole posturing bully thing. You're going to be tender-hearted. I can tell." He went on and on like this, and then he signed it, "Love, Dada." He did it on his second birthday, on his third birthday, on his fourth birthday. By the time he got around to the seventh birthday, he changed his signature just to "Love, Dad." After the 16th letter, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Impossible to fight. That's what the doctor said. Impossible to fight. And so the 17th letter was more than just a few sentences, more than just a few paragraphs about the past and the present and the future. That 17th letter was a treatise, a missive, really. Everything he needed to say to his son about love, about courage, about honor, about how to conduct yourself well in the world, about how to shave, about how to wear cologne, not too much, not too little, about how much he loved his boy. Round and round and round and round about how much he loved his son. That's what's happening in today's passage of Scripture. Jesus is having the last meal with his disciples. We're reading John here and not Mark, so we know Jesus knows what's going to happen. He knows the cross is at hand, and it is impossible to fight. And so he sits down with his disciples, and after washing their feet, he starts into what scholars call the farewell discourse. It's like the mother on her deathbed who needs to tell you everything she's forgotten to tell you: how to pick a ripe avocado in the grocery store, how to make a buttercream frosting, how to make mile-high meringue on that lemon pie. He has to tell his disciples everything. It's like that father writing to his 17-year-old boy, nothing but love, 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 this circle of love. Jesus in the Gospel of John is consumed by love. 57 times Jesus uses the verb love. Right before this, he says, "I give you a new commandment, love one another as I have loved you." That's how they'll know you're my disciples, if you love one another. not go the second mile. He doesn't command you to turn the other cheek, to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. No, in John, he says, love one another. Love the world back to life. This passage of Scripture today begins and ends with love. If you love me, you will keep my commandment. And I will ask God to give you an advocate to be with you forever. I will not leave you orphaned, but it's hard to believe that. Ask that 17-year-old child. I will not leave you orphaned. It's hard to believe that when he longs to see his father up in the stands as he's huffing and puffing down the basketball court. It's hard now that the closet is beginning to empty and the smell of his father is starting to leave the house. It's hard for him to believe that he has not been left orphaned because his mother will not erase the phone message because it's in his voice. Sorry, we can't come to the phone right now, but if you leave your name and number, we will get right back to you. Everyone loves the message, but he is so full of anger, and it just feels like a lie because it feels like he has been left alone, and it's the same for us. Sometimes when you fly over the Midwest right now and all you see are the roofs of houses and whole lives submerged in muddy water, it's hard to believe that we have not been left alone. When you see the path of the tornado and the destruction all around, it's hard to believe that we have not been left as orphans when peace still eludes the Middle East. When workers dig through rubble in Pakistan after a car bomb to expose a body, now tell that man's family that they have not been left alone, that God is still with them, that they have not been left orphaned. It's hard to believe that God is still with us, and yet Jesus says this over and over in his farewell address. I will not leave you orphaned. I will send an advocate to you. I will not leave you alone. I will send a comforter. I will not leave you or forsake you. I am sending to you a counselor, a sweet spirit to be with you and to comfort you and to advocate for you. The first time Andrew read those letters was the night after the funeral. His mom left out that shoebox on his bed. And there were 17 of them all lined up, each numbered in the top corner. And he started with number one. He didn't shed a tear when he read it because he was numb. Because of all the festivities, all the people and the food. All his father's family. He read that first letter and he smiled because he could hear his dad's voice. He could see his handwriting, and he could see himself all small and wrinkly in the crook of his dad's arm. He read number two, number three, and he could remember the bike and the broken arm and the trip to the Grand Canyon. He kept reading them. And don't you know, somewhere down the line, he could feel his father all around him, before him and behind him and beside him and inside of him. And it was so palpable. He could smell his dad. It happens like that sometimes when you lose someone and you know that they are there. Even more so with you. Jesus said, I will not leave you orphaned. I am coming to you. In a little while you will see me because I live. So you and your loved ones will live sitting there on the bed reading. He could hear and feel and know that he was not alone, that he would never be alone. God will not leave us orphaned. God will not let us go that quickly. The sweet Spirit is coming. We'll taste it on Pentecost more fully. Now that boy is grown up. And he reads those letters once in a while, but really he has them kind of memorized by heart. He tries to follow his dad's advice to be tender and loving and kind, to give love quickly and easily. And it's easy now because he has a partner and because they've adopted their first child. And here's the gold. Here's the stuff. Every year on her birthday, he writes her a letter, something he loves about their time together, something he loves about her right here and now, something he hopes for her future. And it goes on and on and on. This love on top of love, 57 times times 57 times. Love of a father abiding in a child. Love all around us, in front, behind, inside, but not just love, truth, strength, and counsel, and guidance, and advocacy, even in the air we breathe, even and especially in the valley of the shadow of death and destruction. This is the Spirit of truth, who the world cannot receive, because it doesn't see her or know her, but you know her because she abides in you and she will be inside of you. A voice in your ear, a hand on your shoulder, the presence up in the stands, within you and alongside of you. God will not leave you orphaned. God is coming to you. This is the good news.